Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
It can be pretty easy with a big issue like same-sex marriage to get caught up with the politics and legalities and details of the process, the legislation, the argument. We mustn't forget that people, the people God loves, are at the pointy end of this debate. And this story is very much about that. Now, I've had several public roles over the years and been involved in this debate in various ways, and it was when I was representing the Christian school movement that somebody came to see me to entreat me not to forget his perspective. His name is Colin, and he told me a story not often told. Colin is same-sex attracted, but as a devout Christian, he takes his identity from being a follower of Christ, not from his same-sex attraction. He's a man I admire greatly, who truly has taken the road less travelled. Recently, we welcomed him to Open House.
Thank you.
Well, it's going to be a lot of debate in the next few weeks about this issue. How is that going to be for you?
It's going to be tricky, actually, for me, because I see a lot of things in the media, a lot of views being put forward in the media that kind of make the assumption that, you know, if you have a same-sex attraction, then you are gay. And if you, you know, it's kind of like your sexuality determines your identity. And I struggle with that. I mean, that's definitely true for some people, but it's not true for me. And I guess it's just difficult hearing that there's only that one point of view put forward. And it seems like, you know, people like me are kind of implied that we don't exist. Because I do have a same-sex attraction, but it's not who I am.
Well, let's just explore that a little bit more. Sure. So you have a same-sex attraction, but you're not gay. Do you describe yourself as gay?
No, I definitely don't. Because to me, gay is an identity. You know, to say I am gay means, yes, I have a same-sex attraction, but that's also who I am. And that defines me. And so, you know, I have to live that way because you know, you have to be true to yourself. And I was thinking about that the other day, and it's funny, but I was reading, you know, the Bible talks about us, how we as Christians have to be true to ourselves as well. Like, we have to be who we are. We have to be true to our identity. But our identity doesn't come from our sexuality. The Bible says our identity comes from Jesus. And so that's what I'm doing, and that's what I'm trying to live. And it's just so, so much better than having an identity that's defined by, you know, who I happen to be sexually attracted to.
But you do understand, and you've heard many, and you've engaged with many, I know, people who say, well, who I am is my same-sex attraction, and that defines my identity. It is my sexuality. I am therefore gay. But your story is a little bit different.
Yeah, it is. So I became a Christian when I was 17. And in the following year, I kind of came to the realization that this attraction that I had to men was a real thing, and that I could kind of point to it and name it and say, yes, that is a thing. That actually does exist in my life.
At 17, you became aware that it was a thing. But people talk about being born with a same-sex attraction. Was that your story?
Oh, no, definitely not. I was first attracted to men in a very non-sexual way. I was teased a lot at school for being a girl and for being a wuss and for being all that kind of stuff, and that was really hard. But at the same time, I felt so insecure in myself that I'd look to the older boys, especially the older boys who were really good at sport and seemed to have all of these things that I didn't have. They were confident in themselves. They were you know, good at sport. They had friends, and it was just, oh man, if only I could, you know, kick that goal in the soccer game, then everyone would accept me, and then I would have friends, and then I would feel confident. The fantasies that I had when I was at that age really were just about being accepted by the other guys. It had nothing to do with sexuality at all. But then sort of puberty kicked in, and over time, those sort of non-sexual fantasies sort of started to get pushed to the side, and I started thinking, you know, well, if I just had their muscles, or if I just had their masculinity, or if I just had their whatever physical aspect, then I would be accepted. And you know, maybe I can get that by, you know, some kind of sexual encounter. Maybe I could do it that way. And I wasn't, it's only looking back now that I can I can describe it in those terms. At the time, I felt so ignorant at the time. I was just looking at sort of older boys who, yeah, had something that I lacked. And it's just like, maybe I could get it if I somehow, whatever it is, I can get it. And then slowly those fantasies, yeah, turned into a sexual thing.
And did you have relationships with other boys?
No. Although I guess I did have a very early sexual encounter with an older boy who was just a year older than me. And this is when I was 9 and he was 10, and I didn't really have any friends. And so he'd got into his dad's stash of porn magazines, straight porn, and he wanted to kind of enact those scenes with me. And I kind of thought it was a bit weird at first, but he was like my only friend, so I didn't know what was normal. And I kind of thought, well, you know, at least I'm getting some attention from him, and at least, you know, he's my friend, and, you know, I guess this is just what good friends do, because, you know, how else would I know? But we moved out of the area shortly after, and I never saw him again. So yes. I wouldn't really call it a sexual relationship in the traditional sense, but it did kind of introduce me to this sexual thing long before puberty kicked in, and I think that probably helped to set me down that path as well.
Now, were you at the same time interested in girls?
I liked the idea of being attracted to girls,
right?
But I couldn't bring myself to do it because I didn't know how. I've since learned that it seems to me that most boys develop a attraction to women or to girls because they kind of already know what it means to be a man. And then the feminine is this kind of other mysterious thing that just doesn't make any sense. And because it's fascinating, because it's interesting, they dwell on it. And then puberty kicks in and this gets all mixed up with the whole sexual thing. And that's my understanding, at least, of how opposite sex attraction happens.
Yes.
Well, for me, when puberty kicked in, you know, femininity was just way off the board. Masculinity was the big mystery to me because I didn't understand it and I really wanted it. And it was fascinating to me because I guess I needed it. And so the way I think about it is that when my puberty kicked in, and maybe it kicked in a bit early because of those sexual experiences, that it was the mystery, the fascination of the masculine that kind of got hooked up with my sexuality. And so by the time I had been a Christian for a year, kind of all of these, that slow change had kind of happened and I won't say set in stone because I have changed a lot since then. But certainly at the time it was like, yeah, this is a thing and no, it's not what I want. And is that okay? Am I allowed to not want this? And if I don't follow that path, is it going to work out? Like, am I going to have a life that actually works properly if I'm kind of not living that way?
So like all of us from the ages of puberty through to maybe mid-20s, whatever, you're trying to work out your identity, but for you, there's this mixture of attraction, and it is, as I understand it, for you, more than just a small dalliance. It's something that you feel to this very day. Is that correct?
It is, although it's certainly a lot less than it used to be. One of the wonderful things that God... you become a Christian and God starts teaching you all of these things. The very first thing he taught me was... the very first thing he taught me was to not copy computer games. But the second thing he
Not copy computer games?
That was the very, very first thing that he taught me.
All right, and next?
But next was, it doesn't really matter so much what other people think about you. What matters, he says, is what I think about you. And that was so freeing for me because I've been living my whole school life trying not to get teased. And what you do to not get teased is you make sure that either nobody notices you or you make sure that you don't do a stupid thing in front of everyone again because I just had no idea how to relate socially. And so that was hugely freeing for me. Unfortunately, shortly after that, I found gay porn on the internet because I wanted to know if it was there and I wanted to know if it was... I think I kidded myself that it was a curiosity, but I thought there was a promise that porn would give me what I needed. Which later worked out what I needed was masculinity. And it didn't, of course. Gay porn in particular robbed me of my masculinity. It made me feel even less like a man. It made me even feel, you know, more dissatisfied with myself and more hungry and more desperate and more needy for this thing. So that was pretty awful. But God was really nice, and He got me out of that.
Did you receive treatment at that time? How did you manage to get out of that?
No. Well, this is something that God's taught me only just recently. Is that we're not supposed to do life on our own. We're supposed to do it with other people. But at the time, I was too afraid to talk to anyone. I was too possibly arrogant to think that I could do it on my own. So no, I didn't. And that was really dumb. I kind of wish I could go back in time and tell young me, don't be so stupid. Go and get help. Go and talk to someone who understands, because there are people who understand and there are people who can help. And yes, I guess you sort of can do it on your own, but I wish I hadn't. Anyway, that's the past. Can't change that, and I'm in a much better place now.
Around Australia, you're listening to Open House, and in the context of the same-sex marriage debate, and particularly out of concern for how it may affect people of all kinds in the community, we're speaking tonight with Colin. Colin's already told us that he's a same-sex attracted man, that he became aware of that attraction from puberty through till the time he was 17 when he became a Christian. Now, Colin, the other half of the story is that you're married, you have a child, and you have a strong Christian faith. So these things are perhaps incongruous, or at least could I say it's not a story we hear all the time.
Yeah, that's true. It's a story that I hear very, very infrequently. And I guess on one level it is nice to be special, but on another level, it's a really difficult journey. It's a really difficult
story. Do you know what? I'm just going to stop you there, because I shouldn't have used the word incongruous. I should say that there's a congruence there between your faith and your actions, and that's really interesting. I think that's why it's so interesting to explore that.
I guess so. Once God got me out of porn, he started teaching me about what I needed, and what I needed was masculinity, and he started feeding that by, teaching me that I was a man and I needed to listen to him about what masculinity actually is. It's not about how big your muscles are or anything. It's about, how you act and what your character is and how you see yourself and who you look up to as a role model. And I wanted to look up to God as Father,
yes,
as my role model.
Yes.
That was tricky to do.
Was your own father around when you were growing up?
He was, but he was really trying to do the right thing. He really was. But I was, I think I was just a really sensitive kid, and he just didn't really know how to be a father to a sensitive kid.
I see.
I think I was very needy emotionally. And I know he tried the best that he could, but when I was young and so immature, when you're so immature when you're little, and I really didn't connect with him, and I perceived that he was, mean and nasty and didn't love me. Now, those things weren't actually true, but that's still what I perceived, and I think it's your perceptions that sort of determine where your path goes in life, not
yes,
so much what actually
yes.
happens to you, but how you perceive it.
I think we can all identify with that, Colin. So here you are in your late teens, your early 20s, you're learning more about your faith, asking God how to be masculine, and is it at that stage you start looking for a partner?
No, good grief, no. I'd actually gone out with a girl. I got out with a couple of girls, and I'd always got to the point where, look, I need to tell you my whole story because I don't want this relationship to be, false. Like I don't want you to think that I'm someone that I'm not.
Yes.
So I'd tell them that, well, actually I'm same-sex attracted and I don't think that you're beautiful because I don't even know what that means. And that's why we have to break up. And that's kind of how it went for a few times.
Wow.
But it eventually got to the point through a whole bunch of circumstances where I was just absolutely fed up with the whole dating thing. And I said to God, look, if you want me to be single for the rest of my life, then if that's what you want, then that's okay with me. And that was a big deal for me because I was terrified of being single for my whole life because, people would look at me and think I was weird and there was something wrong with me. Maybe he's gay. And I didn't want people to think that. But, of course, it's not so much about what other people think. It's about what God thinks. And so I decided that if that's what you want for me, then that's okay.
But Colin, at that moment, there would be another way to go. There would be a way of saying, and people have told me this story from their experience, and I completely accept that it is their story from their experience. They've said, at that point, I came to the conclusion that, in fact, I needed to embrace my same-sex attraction, decide that I was gay, and then pursue same-sex partners. That wasn't the case for you, though. Why was it different for you?
Well, yeah, people do choose that, and that's a, you know, they can choose that, but it's just not what I wanted.
Hmm.
I wanted to live God's way. He was the number one in my life, and I wanted, like, God's given me everything. He's given me a new life. He's taken all of my crappiness away, and He's given me something that is just awesome. Knowing that I'm His son, more than just, yes, you know, anything else.
And He accepts incredible. You for whoever you are, really.
And He accepts me for whoever I was. Yes. And it doesn't, yes, just leave it at that. He wants me to be better than I am. I mean, I've learned recently that when Jesus died, He dealt with all of my sin, in the sense that, in one sense, I died as well. Like, my old identity, the only the world gave me, died. And then when Jesus was raised, I was raised too. And what God gave me in that point was a new identity. I wasn't, you know, died and raised physically, but my identity really did die, and a new identity really was given to me when Jesus was raised.
So you said to Him at some stage, well, if you want me to be lonely, that's what I'll pursue, but that's clearly not what happened next.
Well, no. There was a girl that I'd met, although actually I think she'd met me before I met her. She was, oh, that Colin guy, wow, he's really nice. And I hadn't really noticed her at all, even though we were doing lots of stuff together.
Right.
It just hadn't gone on my radar at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this distinct sense from God that He wanted me to consider this girl. And I was not happy, because I'm like, wait, hang on a second, God. I thought we had a deal that, you know, I was going to trust you and you were going to make me single for the rest of my life. And I was actually kind of looking forward to that at that point. That was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really not happy with that. And it's only happened maybe once or twice in my whole life, but I got a really distinct sense from God that we had not made a deal. It was not that we had made a deal.
It was your deal, but it wasn't His deal.
It was, yeah, we had not made a deal. I had given my future over to Him. And so, had I really given my future over to Him or not? And I'm like, oh, you must be kidding. That's just so unfair. So, I mean, she was nice enough. Like, she was friendly. You know, we were good friends. Well, getting to the point of becoming friendly anyway. But I didn't love her, and I didn't think she was beautiful, because I didn't even know what it meant for that to be. But by this stage, my masculinity was was much more secure in my masculinity than I had been in the past. And so I guess because of that, I had the courage that God had given me. So I asked her out. You know, terrified. And of course, you know, a couple of months later, I was like, I need to tell her the truth, because she doesn't know and she kind of deserves it.
And how did she respond?
Oh, just incredible. I was in tears, because I told her the same thing that I've told the other girls, that, you know, I don't find you attractive, and I don't even know how to do that. I don't know how to change that part of me. But
Colin, one day I need to give you some dating tips. But
anyway. Yeah, I don't need them. I really do. Well, not anymore, but I did it.
No, that's right. Go on. I'm sorry. How did she respond? She was.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, look, I understand if you want to leave. And I was in tears at this point. Like, I understand if you want to leave. But for the first time, I actually don't want you to. If you want to stay, that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. But if you want to leave, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the most profound thing. She said, why would I want to leave, Colin? You know, why would I just want to leave? Because, you know, you're not perfect. Like, this is something that you struggle with, and we all struggle with different things. So, you know, we can struggle with it together. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe she said that. That's amazing. So we kept going out, and I kept asking myself every now and then, look, I can't marry her because that's too scary, but I don't want to go out with her forever. So if I had to make a choice now, what would I do? And at first, the choice was break up. Too scary. Marriage is too hard. Can't do it. And I asked myself another month later the same question, and the answer was, oh, I'm really not sure. I think I'd probably break up. And then so I could even see the progression. And eventually I got to the point where I asked myself the question, and it was just like, oh, no, I don't think I would want to break up with her.
Hmm.
Oh, no, that means I have to marry her. And it was just terrifying. But you know, you go from there, and it, you know, chose a ring and did the whole proposal thing, and we got married, and that was 10 years ago. And we've just had the most awesome marriage. I mean, of course we had difficulties. The first 2 years were incredibly difficult, because we made a promise to each other not to sweep any troubles under the carpet, but to deal with everything and talk about it. And we went on, Anglicare had some like marriage weekends away, and they were excellent. They were so, so good. They taught us a whole bunch of things about, you know, how to have a discussion without turning into an argument. And those first 2 years were really hard, though, because we dealt with absolutely everything that we possibly could. But we came out of that with such a tremendous strength, and our marriage is just fantastic. And I love her. And I am attracted to women now. Well, I'm attracted to one woman.
Yes.
And I'm married to her.
Yes.
And it's awesome.
Yes.
And am I still attracted to men? Well, yeah, but it's a lot less than it used to be. And do I still struggle with porn? Well, some old habits die hard. But it's got a lot less appeal to me than it used to. And it's only when I kind of, you know, go back into the lies of, hey, porn is what you need, and hey, that'll make you feel better, and yeah, that's what you need. And I just need to remember that actually, no, God is what I need, because he does satisfy. He actually is satisfying me, and porn's never satisfied me, even though it promises to. And so that's
but your marriage certainly does, and I'm quite sure your young daughter satisfies you a great deal in a whole different set of ways. What's it feel like to be masculine in the context of being a father yourself?
Oh, it's still new territory for me. I mean, being a father is new territory. I mean, my daughter's only three. But I'm trying to remember the things that I've learned about masculinity and being a father to especially a daughter. I can't model femininity to her. That's my wife's job.
Yes.
But in my masculinity, I can affirm her femininity. And so I tell her all the time that she's gorgeous and she's funny and she's beautiful, and she just laps that up like you would not believe. And you know, when she's naughty, I've got to tell her that she's naughty and she's not supposed to do that, and she hates that awfully. She hates getting in trouble with daddy. But you know, there's some things that I can't let her get away with.
Yes.
But having said that, she's just so just amazing little present from God. I still seems unreal. I still can't believe it's
yes.
happening.
On Open House, we're speaking tonight with Colin. He's a man who has had a same-sex attraction as long as he can remember. But after dealing with that with God, is now a married man with a child and learning new things about himself all the time. Colin, I want to ask you finally to help me understand this. In the debate that we're having as a community around the same-sex marriage issue, I take it, well, I know because you've told me that you're a supporter of traditional biblical marriage.
Yeah.
How is the debate? And we hear that for people who are same-sex attracted, particularly young kids in school, for instance, that even having the debate can be a distressing thing. Would you agree with that?
I think having a debate can be distressing, but I don't think that's a reason not to have a debate. Like if I told you that, you know, when you disagree with me, that makes me feel sad, therefore you shouldn't be allowed to disagree with me. That's not okay to say. What we need to do is learn how to disagree with each other in a way that is respectful and isn't either party trying to shut down the other because we're not happy with what the other one says. I'm a big fan of traditional marriage, if that's what we're calling it, because I mean, what I alluded to before was that when you've got kids, no man can make a good mother. No man can make a good mother. And I can't model femininity to my daughter, and she needs it. She needs it from my wife. Primarily, I mean, you know, there's other people that she could model it from, but she's not going to model it from anyone anywhere near as much as she has from her mum. So that's the big thing. And I think part of the reason that it is distressing for the gay community, for people to be disagreeing with them on this topic, even when we're disagreeing with them very respectfully, is that they do associate very strongly connect their same-sex attraction with their identity. For me, same-sex attraction isn't something that I am. It's something that I have. But for them, I don't think they really even understand that. You know, same-sex attraction is what I am. And therefore, when you challenge that and you say, well, I think maybe that's not okay in a marriage context, it's not, they don't hear it as, oh, you don't like what I do. What they hear is, you don't like what I am.
Yes.
And I think the message for them is that you may not have chosen your same-sex attraction. I certainly didn't choose mine. It just kind of happened. But you can choose your identity. And if you're choosing your identity to be your same-sex attraction, then you can't try to just silence other people because they disagree with something that you hold dearly to. Surely we can disagree and be respectful. Surely that's possible. I mean, you know, we're human beings and we can do these things. I'd like people to be doing that more in the public debate. Not trying to silence, but to listen and have a discussion and be respectful.
Well, I can say that a few years ago, probably more than a few, you came to see me as a person who sometimes is involved in this public debate in various things that I do, and you said to me, Colin, you said, please don't let people forget about people like me. It's not a voice that we hear very often in the debate.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased to say that you've helped me today to honour that promise I made to you all those years ago.
Thank you, Stephen.
No, thank you, Colin. Thank you so much for telling your story.
No worries.